Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. I'm Saeed Eastman, CEO and GM of Jobs and ME, filling in for Dave Chulo. And we have a great show for you today. We're talking with Rob Kornblum, author of Never Too Late to Start Up and Entrepreneur Rocket Fuel. Rob, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Excellent. So, Rob, tell us about yourself and the experiences that led you to want to write these books.
Yeah, absolutely. I was a venture capitalist with one of the largest funds in the U.S., investing in high-tech companies, growth companies, internet companies, and really came to realize the importance of team building in building amazing companies. You know, I think the myth was always that it was a great idea that kind of takes things through. And as a VC, I realized that it was, sure, you needed a great idea, but coupled with that, you needed a great team. Well, I left the venture capital business and became an executive in a handful of growth companies, including Monster.com, where I led business development and strategy in the United States, and then a series of other companies, including Bullhorn and a few others, which were all in the human capital space. And then following one startup that I was leading that ended up not working, I had started that company in my mid-40s and realized just how differently 40-something entrepreneurs worked from 20-something entrepreneurs. And that was sort of the genesis for my first book, Never Too Late to Start Up, which is about starting your first company, leaving corporate behind, starting your first company. I realized that, you know, my insights and the insights of other entrepreneurs who started their first company, you know, at similar ages, midlife, which I didn't define, you know, I think could be valuable to a broad section of people, people who have ideas and don't exactly know how to get them off the ground. So I wrote that book. And then a lot of what that book was about, and I did a bunch of interviews in that book with top-tier CEOs, and a lot of what those CEOs had to talk about was how they built their teams and their culture in their mid-40s or even 50s, and how differently that was from the way they you know, would have done it in their 20s. And so that first book really led me into the second one, which was about culture and team building in high-growth companies and startups.
You know, your two books are extremely valuable as resources in aggregate. How has writing them shaped your perspective, especially on recruiting the right team, given the second book?
The way that I really like to get after these topics is not only to take my own ideas and outline them, but to interview other practitioners, other great CEOs. And so for the second book, I was able to interview the founders of some pretty amazing companies, companies like Kayak, Trunk Club, Madison Reed, some top-tier VCs at Norwest Ventures, Maveron. So I was able to take not only my own ideas, but ideas from people who had built pretty amazing companies and also scaled those companies, hired really top-tier teams. You know, in the case of Trunk Club, for example, I spoke with the COO there who had gone from 30 people to 1,500 people in under 3 years. So just incredibly rapid hiring. You know, was able to take all of those executives and CEOs' opinions and best practices and distill them into, you know, into the second book. And I think the thing that I've really come to realize is that team is the single most important part of building a great high-growth company. It's probably more important than the idea.
We're talking with Rob Kornblum, author of Entrepreneur Rocket Fuel, and I'm Saeed Eastman filling in for Dave Chulo on the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. As you talk to your interviewees for the book, any specific bullets that you thought from an example like Kayak that resonated with team building?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a bunch. Kayak, for example, one of the things that they did that was really amazing is they used their smallness and their nimbleness at the beginning of the company and figured out that one of their advantages was speed. And so they used speed as a hiring advantage. They would bring people in for interviews And if they liked that candidate, they would have offers out sometimes by the end of the day, or certainly no later than the following day, and try to have people on board, you know, literally weeks later. So they basically didn't want you to leave the building if they were convinced that they wanted you. So, you know, using your own competitive advantage, I think, is definitely one area. The other is just how much time it takes to build a great team. And so, you know, these CEOs spend anywhere from 20 to 50% of their day focused on team building, which is, you know, a huge amount relative to all the other things they have to do, fundraising, you know, managing the company, driving revenue, all the other stuff. But for them, team, you know, is front and center.
So as we talk about team, I always think of, once you build a team, that's fantastic. But at the same time, I also think about the aspect of engagement. How do you feel in talking to all your interviewees that you did for the book, they're keeping their teams engaged? What are they doing different that's keeping them successful in building these great teams?
Yeah, I think the first thing, one of the quotes that resonated most strongly with me was one CEO, Mark Godley, told me that he felt that culture was an output, not an input. And what he meant by that was, you know, that you can't go about trying to hire for culture. You have to realize that everybody's different, everybody's additive, and that by driving the values that he wanted inside the company, he was able to produce the kind of engaged culture that he was looking for. He also was pretty negative with regard to some of the, let me call them hokier, you know, HR gimmicks, you know, things like that he joked about trust falls and things like that, where he was, you know, basically saying, you know, you can try those things, but none of those really produce culture. The things that produce culture are the way you treat people, the values that you hire for, and the values that you reward people on.
We're talking with Rob Kornblum, author of Entrepreneur Rocket Fuel, and I'm Saeed Eastman, filling in for Dave Chulo on the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. This is a perfect segue to our next question, because it really resonates with me, because from my perspective, I think that culture and hiring is something that is a challenge for both small companies, growth companies, and mature companies. But most importantly, how do the companies that you've talked to and in writing your book, how have you felt about this idea of navigating the culture and fit when the market is really tight and there's a lot of attrition that happens, either through people leaving on their own or, you know, you have to make some changes in your organization?
Yeah, there's no doubt it's an incredibly tight labor market, you know, everywhere you look. I think that's especially true in Silicon Valley, you know, Boston, Austin, but it's true everywhere. And it's true not only for startups, but for small businesses and large companies. So I think, you know, one of the really important elements there is thinking like a marketer for CEOs and HR teams, to really understand that it is a buyer's market and that the candidate, you know, ultimately has a lot of choices. And so changing that focus, both strategically thinking like a marketer, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of the things that you can do there, some other things I want to talk about, and then further, tactically thinking like a marketer. So really simple things like making your application flow really easy. I had a conversation with a friend of mine a couple weeks ago who was applying for a job, and the system that the company was using actually made him go in and put in the phone number and address of his university and his grad school program, which he just thought was crazy. He'd have to go back and look that sort of thing up, right? So it's the kind of thing that companies, it's a little thing, but it really turns off a candidate, right? So really thinking, go through the process of applying, of interviewing, as if you're the candidate. And so that's, you know, that's one area of focus.
It's really interesting because I've been watching the space over the last 20 years, and what's happened is, just as applicant trackings have disintermediated the job boards from the relationships that they have with the companies, they've also done so with separating the applicants from the hiring managers. So I guess my next question would be, how have these companies that you've interviewed built brands to encourage people to want to come and apply for jobs at their organizations? I know you interviewed a few companies for your book that were, you know, brand builders, agencies. So can you elaborate a little bit more on the brand building aspect of recruitment?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a natural segue from the point about thinking like a marketer. I think that one of the mistakes that startups and small businesses make is they don't build a story around why a candidate should come to work for them. And if you think like a marketer, you know, and you think about the benefits of your organization as opposed to other organizations, and then build out a story, build it out from the perspective of why does somebody want to come work there in the first place? What's the company's mission? Why is that an exciting mission? Who are they going to work for? Does the company have a history of promoting talent from within? You know, there's always going to be questions around comp and benefits, but I don't necessarily think those are the differentiators. I think articulating that story in terms of again, why the candidate wants to come work there, what's in it for them, and then using some tools to get that story out. So video is a really powerful tool. It doesn't need to be expensive. You know, you can do handheld iPhone videos and, you know, clean that up yourself with iMovie or something like that. You can also, you know, use low-cost videographers you can find or low-cost editors. But articulating that story in text, articulating it in video, having those assets on your website, and really, you know, again, thinking from the candidate's perspective, why do I want to come work there? That's one big element. The other one that I thought was really interesting is from some of these agencies is using different types of tools. And one of those tools is in-house recruiting. So bringing candidates in using events and other opportunities for people to come in and see the office, meet people face-to-face, shake hands, and really get excited about the mission on a face-to-face basis as opposed to just, you know, through a website.
I mean, interesting. You know, this leads me to the question of, you know, humanizing recruitment and having people actually come into the office. So throughout your book, Entrepreneur Rocket Fuel, there are a lot of examples around the topic of interview processes. Can you elaborate a little bit more on the unifying factor of the interviews that occurred for recruitment across, you know, across all the companies?
Yeah, for sure. The common theme that I found was all of these high growth companies moving from traditional interviewing processes, you know, the classic, you know, sit down across from someone, tell me about yourself, you know, sort of interview, which these CEOs really felt led to very flat in levels of engagement and really didn't enable them to figure out who the candidate was on the other side. So moving from that traditional interviewing into kind of a second phase that I would call behavioral, which is really trying to understand how candidates behave under certain situations. So, you know, the perfect example of that is the tell me about a time when type interview question. And there's a whole series of those. And so behavioral interviewing was definitely a best practice. And then a lot of companies moved past that into what I would call experiential interviewing, or even, you know, if you can take it a step further, a job simulation. So when they got down to, and you can't do this really broadly at the top of the candidate funnel, but more towards the bottom, when you get down to a series of finalists, to give them a set of information, let's just say you're looking for a director of marketing. So to give them a challenge and let them articulate that challenge. So, and they can articulate it, you know, different people think differently. So somebody might write out, you know, a Word doc, somebody else might do a PowerPoint. And then having the candidates present their thoughts on that challenge. And so that job simulation reveals a lot about the candidate. It reveals not only who they are and how they think, but it also reveals how they interact with people they need to gather information from, how they interact with their boss, with their peers, with their underlings. And ultimately that interaction, in addition to, you know, the skills, is what's most revealing in that job simulation.
Yeah, in reading your book, it was really interesting how the problem solving of during the interview process spanned beyond technology, because I have heard that happening within the coding world where, you know, an engineer or developer is given a problem to solve from a perspective of coding, and then they come back and present their solution. I think it's great that interviewees now are being asked to solve real world problems and then having to discuss them with other prospective managers or hiring managers or recruiters.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely is much, much beyond the coding or technical skills. You know, these types of companies, again, companies like Kayak, one of the CEOs I interviewed, a founder of a company called Outlier, who had been the founder of a company called Flurry, which was a very big success, sold that to Yahoo for a few $100 million, took that experiential interview or that job simulation into every function. So they were doing that in accounting. They were doing that in marketing, in sales. Trunk Club, actually, in sales, had their sales candidates actually do the job in a nights, weekends, after hours for over a week. And they, you know, they were mirroring one of the existing salespeople. And so that mirroring revealed not only the sales skills of the candidate, but again, how they would interface in a challenging situation. And so companies have taken this to every function.
We're talking with Rob Kornblum, author of Entrepreneur Rocket Fuel. I'm Saeed Eastman, filling in for Dave Chulo. We're going to take a break, but we'll be right back with more on the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsinME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsinME.com. That's JobsinME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Hi, this is Derek Volk, host of The Derek Volk Show. I want to tell you about my book, Chasing the Rabbit, A Dad's Life Raising a Son on the Spectrum. My book is a rare and emotionally truthful story of my experiences as a father raising a son on the autism spectrum. When Dylan was 2 years old, my wife sat me down and said, "Something's not quite right with Dylan." My book takes you from birth to that day at age two until he was diagnosed with autism 6 years later. And then through his extremely rocky middle school years, his volatile high school life, and his challenging path to adulthood. The story has been called extremely raw and shockingly honest, and has been given 5 stars by every review on Amazon. Please go to our website, chasingtherabbit.org, to learn more about our story. That's chasingtherabbit.org.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than 7 generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across 7 offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey! The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock. And it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. I'm Saeed Eastman, CEO and GM of JobsinME, filling in for Dave Chulo, and we're talking with Rob Kornblum, author of Entrepreneur Rocket Fuel. Rob, welcome back.
Thanks so much.
So, Rob, we've been talking about team building, and one of the things I want to gravitate towards is that not all teams are built perfectly, and sometimes you have to make adjustments. Hiring the wrong people can be costly. So what are great companies doing to avoid making bad hires?
Yeah, there really are 3 things that I can highlight, one of which we touched on already, which is changing the interview process from the traditional, you know, interview, which really yields itself to likability, to, you know, much more job simulation, you know, type, which people found was way more revealing of both skills and character, which is what I would call kind of the mid funnel. The other two are really filling the top of the funnel. So people who have implemented not only classic employee referral programs, because referrals are a great way to get, you know, like-minded and like-skilled A players, but also pipeline building. So, and CEOs pushing this down to VPs as well inside their companies to make it their point to go out and meet great candidates, months or sometimes even years ahead of when they would be needed. And filling that, keeping that pipeline full makes it so that you have your choice of A players, and so you're not quite so reactive. That was one of the other things. And then I think the last one is just acknowledging when mistakes are made, acknowledging that quickly and moving on quickly. Most of the time, when you make a bad hire, not only do you know it, but the candidate pretty well knows it too, right? If it's a bad fit, the candidates know it. And these CEOs were very clear and honest with their bad hires to say, hey, we acknowledge it's not quite working. Very often the candidate, they felt like breathed a sigh of relief. At that point, they weren't a candidate, they were an employee, to say, yeah, you're right, this isn't the right place for me, or this isn't the right role for me. And so in that context, Rob Chesney, who was the COO of Trunk Club that I mentioned, explosive company doing a ton of hiring, he had a lot of young managers, inexperienced managers, and he found that he had to coach his managers into moving on very quickly because the bias there is really, you've invested a lot of time in someone, you really want to make it work. And in trying to make it work, not only are you neglecting the rest of your team, but you're keeping somebody around who just isn't a fit. And it brings down the overall performance of the whole team. So just for him, it was coaching people through an understanding that you're not going to be perfect in your hiring, especially when you're in rapid growth mode, and acknowledging that there are times you just need to move on and move on quickly.
Yeah. So from startups to growth companies to mature companies, I think as we talk about avoiding bad hires, as we talk about building teams, I think about the concept of solutions to support this build out. When you're a startup, you want to put all your money into building the product, building, getting the next hire. But what are some of the things that you found in your conversations with the executives that you interviewed for your book about systems that they put in place that are technology supported? We talk about applicant tracking system. We talk about employment engagement solutions. We talk about HRIS. We talk about other things. But some of them have, used technology to support this growth.
Yeah, for sure. It's not an area that gets a lot of investment relative to, as you mentioned, building out product and customer acquisition in terms of systems. I think, though, that founders have a tendency to view process, founders of startups, high-growth startups, have a tendency to view process as being onerous. And, these successful founders, looking back on it, realized that they had processes in place. It's just that they were lightweight and they built process as they needed it. And so I'll give you an example. A hiring process can be as simple as a checklist on a Google Doc, right? It doesn't need to be a big, heavy technology solution. And a checklist on a Google Doc just makes sure that everybody's working from the same page and following the same steps. An interview process can be as simple as getting the interview team together before the candidate comes in and make sure that everybody knows the types of things they're going to ask about. One person's going to ask more about background, another person's going to ask more about character and values, and then getting the team back together right away to make sure that opinions don't get lost and things don't lag. So, those types of things are really simplistic forms of process, and they get more complicated as the company gets bigger, and they get more technology-centered as the company gets bigger and as growth increases. So the message is really build what you need, keep it really simple and light, but have a process for everything, process for how you handle candidates, inbound from referral versus inbound from another mechanism. Keep a simple checklist, make sure everybody has access to it, make sure that people follow it, and know what your advantages are. In the case of Kayak, we talked about their advantage being speed. So keeping that process light, but having one is the key differentiator.
We're talking with Rob Kornblum, author of Entrepreneur Rocket Fuel, and I'm Saeed Eastman filling in for Dave Chulo on the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. So it is interesting that you say keep things light and simple. And I always think of dealing with small to medium businesses in our markets here as not everything has to break the wallet. So from a processes perspective, what are some tips that you can give that have kept people, for better brand building that's inexpensive? You just gave some that are processes that are, people can still implement. If you're a small business, you don't have a huge budget to invest in, in technology. But there are free solutions out there, and there are also free solutions for brand building.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the most important systems, obviously, is an applicant tracking system. You want to make sure that you are not only keeping track of all your potential candidates, but that you have a pool where someone may be the wrong fit at the point in time where your company is. Maybe they're more of a big company person and you're smaller than that. Maybe their salary needs are a little bit different from where you are. But keeping track of them so that you can go back in and find them after the fact, right? I think a lot of companies that are looking to save money, you know, are in a place where if it's not a perfect fit, a square, you know, peg in a square hole, then, you know, they reject that candidate and they kind of move on. But that's still an asset that you have that you can go back in and find, firstly. Secondly, understanding that not only employee referrals, but candidate referrals are an incredibly powerful mechanism for finding great people. I mentioned Sean Burns, the CEO of this company, Outlier, said, we want to be so good at our candidate interaction that somebody we reject will still refer their friend into the company. And they had that happen a few times. And so, you know, treating candidates exceptionally well, that doesn't cost any money. You know, that's a completely free solution, but it yields a really good feeling from somebody, even if they end up being rejected, such that they come away wowed with your mission and maybe will refer their friends, you know, which is very low cost. And then I think lastly, there are incredibly inexpensive ways of doing the brand building and story building, whether that's in written form, in video form, but putting those assets on your website and communicating those out to your candidates to make sure they understand and get excited about the mission of the business. Yeah.
So as I think about your book and I think about the people you interviewed, one theme that rings true for me is that all of your interviewees were C-level people, which means that recruiting starts at the top for all the people that you've been talking to. So building a team is evangelizing your organization and continuing to, you mentioned building a pipeline. You can't build a pipeline without having a top salesperson promoting your organization, what products you're building, what value you're going to be bringing to the market, et cetera. Was that something that you felt you needed to do in talking to the companies outside, or do you think that there's other people in the organization that do the recruiting function differently?
I think it's a mix, but I think you're absolutely right. It starts at the top. There's no doubt that the CEO and other founders of startup businesses set the tone. They're the ones who articulate the mission. They're the ones who explain the vision and values and purpose of the company. They get the most excited, right? It's typically their idea, their baby that they're trying to birth here into a new business. And so even if you're in a situation where there's an HR team that's doing a lot of tactics, or there's internal or external recruiters, it absolutely positively has to start at the C-level. And as I mentioned, you know, these CEOs spend anywhere from 20 to 50% of their time. Sometimes if they're trying to recruit senior team members, it could be as much as 75 or 80% of their time in recruiting and team building. So that's one example. I spoke with a guy, Rob Biederman, the founder of a company, Catalent Technologies in Boston, a very high growth business. And he said that he and his co-founder still do outreach on LinkedIn personally, because they found for candidates, they found that their response rate to the same candidate was better than from their HR internal recruiting team. And not surprising, right? It feels good as a candidate to have a CEO reach out to you as opposed to have a recruiter reach out to you. So they were still doing a lot of the nitty gritty. So, you know, even if you're going to outsource or insource, you know, a bunch of the work to a recruiting team, I think it's really, really important that CEOs and other, you know, other founders or, you know, high level executives are the ones who, again, articulate, explain the mission, the values, and are the ones who are kind of the chief salespeople.
We're talking with Rob Kornblum, author of Entrepreneur Rocket Fuel, and I'm Saeed Eastman filling in for Dave Chulo on the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Well, so given the fact that executives are short on time, one area that I find is extremely important is having a marketing component to your HR recruitment strategy. So you interviewed Neil Costa from HireClicks as part of the book. Can you elaborate? In the interview, he mentioned a variety of different topics that help improve the brand of the company, because a CEO can only talk so many times to so many people. So you need kind of a bullhorn, and brand building and marketing is that bullhorn.
Yeah, for sure. I was really happy to be able to interview Neil. I had known Neil for quite a while, actually. He and I worked together at Monster.com, and then When we both left, Neil went off and started this recruitment advertising agency, HireClix. So he's just an absolute expert in this recruitment marketing area. And, you know, he mentioned a number of things. One thing he mentioned was articulating the story. And so that whole chapter of the book really came from my interview with Neil about, you know, having that story be one that's consistent and coherent and exciting and really focused in, again, on the what's in it for me element for a candidate. He also mentioned, you know, a really simple thing about thinking about the flow for a candidate who lands on a company's website. How do they get to the jobs? And so, you know, one of the simple things that Neil recommended was taking the careers section of a company's website and moving it from, you know, the About Us area, you know, a couple clicks down, if you will, to the front page, to really making it, you know, a front page worthy area. And, you know, he explained to me that it's the same as kind of any digital marketing. The more clicks that you make somebody go through, the harder it is and the more drop off you're going to have. So make it simple. You know, make it simple for somebody to get to jobs. And then one other area that he mentioned was around the candidate experience. So having somebody be able to reach out and get information without it having to be a cumbersome apply process. And then the last one was using these events. So hiring events where, you know, you can market the event itself, typically after hours, but sometimes lunchtime, where, again, you can get 5, 10, 25, you know, 50 candidates to show up at a company, you know, and meet people. And that's always a better way of getting people excited about the mission of the business, you know, is to be able to do that face to face.
Excellent. We're talking with Rob Kornblum, author of Entrepreneur Rocket Fuel, and I'm Saeed Eastman filling in for Dave Chulo. We're going to take a break, but we'll be right back with more on the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
It's 3 p.m., and you just ran out of ink. You have a report due end of day, which is 2 hours from now. You can't push the deadline because end of day means end of today, not end of tomorrow day. What now? Go to your local Staples store. Staples now has an even bigger selection of HP ink and toner. In store, in stock, and at low prices every day. So you can get your ink fast for less. End of story.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs and ME.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs and ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Guys, when you buy your clothes at DXL, you look good. But you feel like a rock star. So if you want to look and feel like a... You'll find all the brands you love, waist size 38 and up, all in one awesome store. DXL, you're looking good. Right now, Harbor Bay long sleeve tees are just $29.99 each when you buy two or more.
Welcome back to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. I'm Saeed Eastman, CEO and GM of Jobs and ME, filling in for Dave Chulo, and we're talking with Rob Kornblum, author of Entrepreneur Rocket Fuel. Rob, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
So, Rob, we're talking about team building, and we're talking about teams being the fuel that helps companies. Can you elaborate a little bit more on the title of your second book?
Yeah, absolutely. That was the driver of the title. I've actually had people ask me about it, and because it doesn't mention the word talent or A teams or that kind of thing. But for high growth companies, startups and other companies that are in growth mode, I really viewed it that the market that somebody was going after, the problem they were trying to solve, was their destination. They are trying to launch something brand new, get a rocket off the ground, if you will. But it doesn't matter how good the product is or the market is or the customer pain. If you don't have an amazing team, you're not going to get there. And so the team really is the fuel that makes the rocket go. And that was the origin of the title.
Excellent. Well, one thing I do notice is both your books tie nicely together, whether it's, you know, Never Too Late to Start Up or Entrepreneur Rocket Fuel. I know when reading the titles, I know what the books are going to be about, so which is great. Can you elaborate a little bit more on the companies that you talk to, and because of their successes, we want to see if we can draw some themes from them that we think will help other businesses that listen to our program.
Absolutely. I think one of those is one of those themes is really making sure that you live the values of the business. The CEOs that I spoke with had strong conviction that their businesses had a set of values. One of them, Amy Arrett, one of their values was love, interestingly enough. They had candidates who came in and said, what does love have to do with this business? And they basically said, well, if you don't know the answer to that, we know you're not a fit. They were thinking about love of customer, love of the environment, love of one another. I'm not saying you need to have love as one of your corporate values, but it is interesting to have them, articulate them, and live them. And I think one of the most important parts about living them is making sure that they're not just posters on a wall. I've been in businesses, you probably have too, where you have a poster on the wall that articulates a value and you realize that the company doesn't live that value at all. And everybody knows that. It creates a real sense of puzzlement and a sense that the company's values really aren't that important to the management team. And so living those values is one of those critical themes. Hiring for values rather than trying to hire for culture was one of those really important themes, and which was news to me, quite honestly. I had always thought about culture fit as being an important part of high-growth startups. And in Silicon Valley, in Boston, in some of these markets, one of the challenges that companies have is around diversity, building diverse teams, which has been pretty well statistically shown to produce better outcomes. And if you try to hire for culture and culture fit, many of the CEOs said that was really a code word for bias. And you end up in Silicon Valley, for example, with a bunch of 25-year-old Stanford grads, not that there's anything wrong with that, but they reinforce that. And you end up avoiding older candidates or people of color or gender, or you just end up with that lack of diversity because you haven't defined what culture fit is. And it becomes a crutch that people fall back on. Oh, this person's not a fit. And so articulating what the values are that you're looking for. And then one of the other best practices is not only figuring out that value in the case of Amy Arrett and Madison Reed, love, but also articulating how does somebody live that value? What are some examples of it? And then taking it a step further, what are some anti-examples, some negative examples? And so you can begin to filter on positive examples and negative examples of people who fit against that value. And then the last piece of that I thought was really fascinating was one of the companies that I interviewed that used values as part of their annual review process. So not only were they reviewing their employees against how did you do in your job relative to the metrics that I need you to hit, but also how are you living our values? And they used both of those in figuring out promotion and bonus.
Well, interestingly enough, you know, listening to you say love to me in a company structure puts a smile on my face because I always say the world always needs a little bit more love.
Amen.
But I think you can also say, you know what, respect for your colleagues is something that should be part of every company's value, because you have intelligent people working, so respect is key. So that's something that I think can easily be translated to love. So it sounds, love sounds hokey, but it really is, you know, you want to love one another, respect one another, and respect people's decisions that they're making on behalf of the organization, and disagree in a positive way. That's all part of the value.
Yeah, for sure. Almost all of these companies lived a no jerks rule. Not only were they trying to filter against having bad fits, jerks, what have you, people who didn't behave properly inside the company, they also were looking to remove those people as quickly as possible if they found them. And the challenge, of course, is when you have supremely talented people who in some cases produce 2x, 5x, 10x what an average employee produces, but they're a jerk. They bring down the performance of the whole team. They bring down the performance of the whole company in some cases. I liken it to they walk around and break glass, and somebody has to walk around behind them with a broom, you know, in a dustpan, sweeping up glass so people don't step on it. And so almost all of these companies, really high-growth businesses, adopt this no-jerks policy and do their best to continue to only hire what they view as A players. They liken it to you can't dilute the gene pool. So as soon as you hire a B player, that B player is going to hire other B players or even C players. And so, you know, keeping your criteria up, keeping, you know, your rigor up for hiring nothing but the best, even at the expense of growth. And that's the biggest challenge for a high growth startup, is that you have expectations of how quickly you're going to grow. You know you need people. You have deadlines that you've told your investors and your board about, but you are not going to sacrifice the quality of the team, and you're not going to sacrifice your A players for jerks.
Yeah. One key thing that I noticed in this book, which I thought was brilliant, because it's something that you hear very often, which is perks confused with value and mission of an organization or culture. The idea of a free lunch, free ice cream social, morning yoga, etc. Why do you think that none of the executives in your organization talk about perks? Because they do offer perks.
They do, and perks are important. In high growth companies, the biggest companies, you know, set the bar. I think we've all probably read about or heard about Google and their free lunches, amazing catered lunches with gourmet chefs, and they pick up your dry cleaning, and you can get a free oil change or, you know, an on-site oil change, all these amazing perks that they offer. But those things are not the reason people come to work, and they're not the reason that people stay at work. People come for the mission, and they come to be part of a successful team, and they come for their own personal growth. And they leave because they don't buy into the mission, because they don't like their manager. They don't ever leave because you're not offering the best perks. Yep. In fact, many of these CEOs of growth stage businesses that I interviewed outright rejected some perks. They had no ping pong tables, for example. They didn't want people isolated in that way, in a two-on-two mode. They believe in socializing, but they just didn't believe in some of those forms of perks.
Yep. Well, interestingly enough, I always tell people, I go, you know what? If you're getting free perks, those perks are intended to chain you down. If they're picking you up at your home in a bus and giving you Wi-Fi, they don't want you to take a nap on the way to work. They want you to work on the way to work.
Yeah, for sure.
So the other thing that I thought was really nice about one of the interviewees, and maybe you can elaborate on this, was how they set up their organization and built their teams based on their own lifestyle of work-life balance, because people had lives outside of work, and it wasn't just about, you know, pulling 12-hour days.
Yeah, that interview came out of and really was built from my first book. I interviewed a guy, Lou Cerny, who was the founder of company New Relic, which is a software company, has since gone public, is out of market value probably somewhere between $5 and $10 billion. So it's an incredibly successful business now, a couple thousand employees. And it was Lou's second high-tech software company. His first company he had started in his 20s. He had sold that business and was building New Relic. He was 39 or 40 when he started the company. He had a toddler at home. He very much wanted to be able to see his toddler. He wanted to be able to go home and cook dinner for his family. So he made it a point to build a culture at New Relic that focused on efficiency rather than hours. He focused on it for himself. He hired people who focused on it. And the New Relic parking lot in Silicon Valley empties at 5 or 5:30 in comparison to a lot of high-tech companies. Contrast, for example, Facebook, where the early employees were told to bring their kids into the office so that they could, you know, kiss them goodnight because they were going to spend the bulk of the evening there. Whereas New Relic, you know, people were going home at 5 and 5:30. Lou said that he wanted New Relic to be the best place that people ever worked. And he wanted to emphasize not only that they had a place that they could leave and go home, but he didn't want them checking in very often. He didn't want them emailing or on Slack or any of that kind of stuff. He wanted them to be able to go home and enjoy their life.
We're talking with Rob Kornblum, author of Entrepreneur Rocket Fuel, and I'm Saeed Eastman filling in for Dave Chulo. We're going to take a break, but we'll be right back with more on the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Life's never perfect, but as realtors, we know living it in the perfect place can make a big difference.
Imagine
hiding from your screeching children in that spacious walk-in closet, watching the neighbor's dog poop on the freshly sodded grass you negotiated during closing, dropping your cell phone in the toilet of the spa-like five-piece bathroom again. So get the perfect place to house all of life's imperfections. Get Realtor. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. I'm Saeed Eastman, CEO and GM of Jobs in ME, filling in for Dave Chulo, and we're talking with Rob Kornblum, author of Entrepreneur Rocket Fuel. Rob, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
So, Rob, you know, we're getting to the end of the program, and I wanted to see if I can give you an opportunity to give our listeners a few tips, and I'm thinking maybe two or three tips that people can take away from reading your books.
Absolutely. I would say the most distinguishing areas that high growth companies are using to build amazing A-plus teams that are applicable to kind of every small business, even mid-sized and larger companies, first is to really think about to market yourself and think about what you mean to the candidate, why that candidate wants to come work for your company. The second is to build a process around hiring. not too much process, but just enough process. One of the areas, for example, that we didn't really touch on is an onboarding process. When candidates come in and join a company, they aren't really a part of that company for probably the first 90 days or so. Just like companies are thinking about, you know, assessing candidates and whether or not they're a good fit for those first 90 days, candidates are thinking about the same thing. So if somebody comes in and they don't really have, you know, a clean desk, they don't have a computer set up, they aren't greeted at the door by their manager, all kinds of best practices, then they kind of scratch their heads a little bit and wonder whether or not the company really values them. And most people who are in a job search have multiple opportunities, and it's not uncommon for people to come in and bounce, walk away from a job within the first, you know, 30 to 60 days. So really thinking about an onboarding process as part of the total hiring process is the second. And then I think the third is really to emphasize values in your hiring process, making sure that people are a good fit for the values that you have, that you've articulated, and making sure that those candidates are going to be value accretive to the business. Those would be the biggest three.
Well, first of all, I'm really glad that you brought back the topic to onboarding, because I always think that first impressions make a huge difference for both employer and job seeker. So I'm really happy to hear that. Given the fact that you're on your second book, I wanted to give you an opportunity to let people know how they can get a hold of you and how they can get a hold of your book. And maybe you have a website that people can go to get information about you and about your business and about your books.
For sure. Yeah. I am a coach of high growth companies, and I work with founders and executives in those types of businesses. My website is startlaunchgrow.com. There's a contact form there. People can also email me, rob@startlaunchgrow. If you're interested in my books, I would be delighted. They're available on Amazon, both in Kindle form and paperback. The two titles are Never Too Late to Start Up and Entrepreneur Rocket Fuel. They're, again, available on Amazon, and I would love to have people check them out.
Rob, thank you so much for coming on the program. I'm Saeed Eastman, and you've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com.
And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VerylDana.com.
Hi, this is Tani Alvarez from VerylDana. What does the term wages actually mean? When you Google wages, you likely see definitions that include the monetary salary or hourly amount paid to the individual, as well as additional benefits provided, such as health insurance, short-term disability, and other similar monetary compensation. But do other perks of the job constitute wages? Unsurprisingly, the answer is, it depends. It is important that an employer checks local and state statutes to see how the term wages is defined. In many states, the definition includes paid time off or vacation pay, but not sick time. If you have further questions concerning what constitutes wages and when you are required to pay those wages, contact a member of VerylDana's Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VerylDana.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.